The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decision.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth.
Hey, welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. I'm John Walker from the Cordasco Financial Network, a part of Mercer Advisors. Thrilled to be with you again this week and going to tackle a topic that's pretty important this time of year. Year end is fast approaching, and while we may have some general malaise in attitude towards the markets and what's going on maybe economically, one of the things that often gets overlooked this time of year, and we encourage you to be thinking about it front and center, is there's always opportunity, right? And year end allows for some really important planning things to consider before the calendar year turns. So I'm going to welcome in my great friend, colleague, and frequent guest of the show, Mr. Tim Joseph, CFP and CPA, a part of the Cordasco team and Mercer Advisors. Tim, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, John. I'm glad to be back.
As I said in the beginning there, right, there's a lot going on in the world, but there's some really important things you should be thinking about when it comes to your money and your finances before we get to the end of the year. There's a sweet spot here from a timing perspective where you have maybe a good sense of what things are going to look like for you this year from a tax perspective when it comes to income and other things. You've got a little time window here, certain decisions that have to be made before the end of the year when it comes to things with tax and with the IRS and other things, right? And there's time frames where opportunities expire. So we're going to jump into some things, right, that people should be thinking about before they run out of time, right? And one of the things that is a unique situation, maybe a little bit this year relative to prior years, is it's a great opportunity to analyze and look at your losses and see if there's any opportunity to harvest or do any tax loss harvesting. And as I said, given that bonds and stocks have had a tumultuous year, you might have some opportunities this year that you didn't in previous years.
Correct, John. This topic here, also known as tax harvesting losses, we also talk about tax harvesting gains. We focused on that quite a bit prior to 2022. However, this is what I would say is unique in terms of tax planning for 2022 at year-end time compared to most recent history for sure. So what exactly does tax harvest loss mean? It's very common. It's a common approach, common strategy, something you hear about quite a bit. But what does it really mean to you as a taxpayer? Well, quite a bit of our investors, no matter what type of investor you are, have losses somewhere in their portfolio this year, somewhere amongst the holdings. Why do I say that? Because both bond and equity markets are down quite a bit, much more than we'd ever like to see, of course, this year. So what can you do about that? You know, let's try to create something good out of that. Well, even if you're the most conservative investor with all bond money, you're going to see something in your portfolio that's likely down in value from the day you purchased it, right? So what you can do is simply sell that. Now, this would be related to post-tax accounts, right? If you have IRA money, 401k money, or Roth IRA account, selling something in what they call qualified accounts would not be applicable to this. Okay, but any post-tax money, joint accounts, individual accounts would certainly be applicable. So what you do is you take a look at your original investment into an investment, and you take a look at whether it's worth more or less right now than the original purchase. Okay, so if it's worth less than the original purchase price, you have a loss sitting there that if you were to sell that holding, okay, and do something else with the money, nonetheless, sell it before year end. And that loss goes from unrealized on paper to now a realized loss that will be reported on a tax return. Okay. And that loss can be used to offset. Maybe you sold something with a gain, right? Maybe it was early in the year and you took some rebalancing approaches and took some gains from all those years before. And it's sitting there with gains in your overall mix. Well, you can use these losses now to offset those gains. Okay. So they do net together and you pay tax on that net number. If you don't have any gains realized for the year and you only have this choice right now for tax purposes to take a loss, that's perfectly fine. your tax return will allow you to recognize a loss of up to $3,000 against any of your other income, no matter what that income may be from, wages or rental properties, whatever that may be. You can take this $3,000 loss and offset it against that. If you had a loss that you recognized and realized for more than $3,000, that's fine too. You simply will be able to carry over to the future years indefinitely any losses that are not recognized in the current year. You can carry them over to the future years and help offset gains in other income and take $3,000 more again. Okay. Now, one of the confusions that kicks in is this. If you have gains, okay, keep saying $3,000 in losses. If you have gains, though, you can recognize more than a $3,000 loss to help offset them. You just cannot net together your gains and losses for more than a $3,000 loss in any one year, right? And then, like I said, it carries over in scenarios where that net loss is more than that. If you buy the same exact holding within 30 days, though, they will disallow that loss as recognizable. It's called a wash sale rule. They do not let you take that loss you're trying to take because you bought it right back. You have to wait after 30 days is when you can buy back this type of holding. But what you can do, though, is simply buy something else immediately that is not identical to what you bought.
Given the volatility we've seen in the market this year in both the equities and bond portfolios, you might have the opportunity to take advantage of gains or losses that may not have existed previously. So it's important to do an analysis and see if you have the opportunity to do that, and it could create a favorable tax situation for you. This is a bit of a more unique opportunity to be able to do that.
You have to think about things like, what tax bracket are you in? Do you have a tax liability? If you don't have a tax liability because of the deductions that are allowed, regardless of this scenario, a tax loss may not help you right now, but it can help you down the road. The losses can be used to offset things like selling a real estate property for a gain, right? Investment losses can help offset something like that. So the losses don't disappear. Fortunately, that's the good news about recognizing something. You don't use it in the current year. You likely can use it in the future years.
Also a really critical point, those tax losses and gains can come from different vehicles, right? It's just you really have to do the right accounting and understand how they all interplay. Tim, one of the other unique opportunities because of what we've seen the markets do this year, and we've had a lot of questions from listeners about, which is around Roth conversions, and is now a good time to consider a Roth conversion, right? And I'll preface this, and I'm sure you'll get into it, by saying there's no easy answer to all of these things, right? It's really what's unique to you, your plan, your unique situation. But broadly speaking, this year presents, because we've seen some declines in the equities market, right? On the whole, not everything, again, these are broad generalizations, but on the whole, since the equities market has had a volatile year and it might be down for you in your portfolio, it does create, from a planning perspective, a unique opportunity when it comes to Roth conversions that we haven't seen in previous years of late.
This does create an opportunity here to think about, for sure. Let's face it, most workers, taxpayers, savers, during their career, contribute money to their retirement plans at work. And that money is typically put in a pre-tax basis account, okay? Even if you're not employed or self-employed or don't have a company retirement plan, you can potentially contribute to IRA accounts over the years, which is another avenue of a pre-tax account. Well, eventually, as we all know, pre-tax is not something that can be in a pre-tax bucket forever, okay? There comes a time at the age of 72 in today's law in which that money has to start coming out of the pre-tax bucket and considered income in the future. As you're putting money into this bucket, it lowers your taxable income. So there's why it's considered pre-tax. Well, eventually you have to make withdrawals from the accounts. Saying that, a Roth IRA is the opposite, where if money can be put in a Roth IRA, it's never taxable after the fact. Okay, you put post-tax money into it, and then the growth that you get, hopefully from the investment, will be considered tax-free for life. That is the best place a saver from a tax standpoint can have their assets located into, okay? Now, it's not easy to get money into a Roth. There's plenty of ifs, ands, or buts, but one way you can do that is simply converting your pre-tax money over to a Roth IRA money, okay? You can do that. However, it is a taxable transaction on the way over, okay? It is a withdrawal from a pre-tax bucket into an after-tax bucket that's considered income on the way over. So like you said before, John, This is very much a case-by-case scenario in particular, understanding what income tax bracket you may be in, depending on how much you convert. For example, you may not want to do a full conversion of your account. You can simply do a smaller amount or a little by little, or maybe it just doesn't make any sense at all. Okay, it's not for everyone. However, there's important to understand all of your options available, where your tax bracket is going to fall. Does it make sense? One of the cases for Roth conversion is the fact that it's very possible, we don't know, but it's certainly possible that tax rates in the future may be higher than they are now. We saw a pretty friendly tax cut as recent as 2018 that is still in effect. If tax law doesn't change, it will end after 2025, and the rates can go back to where they were prior if new legislation is not passed. That would indicate that you may want to do a conversion because you'd rather pay the lower rate now than some other number in the future, right? So each one of these cases is a deep dive analysis that may or may not make so much sense. And sometimes if the tax rate is the same now as it was later, it may be just you paying taxes ahead of time, okay? It may be as simple as that and prepaying it instead of paying it later. And there could be good reasons to do that. If you pay the same now as later, there's not much difference. However, the dollar is always worth more now than it is tomorrow. So the case would be to say, well, I'd rather pay it later in that scenario, right? But it is interesting this year, though, that your IRA monies or pre-tax monies are likely worth less than they were when the year started. That actually adds to the case of why a Roth may make even more sense this year than years we've seen in the recent history.
Absolutely, right? And I'll reiterate, it's important to understand that factors such as your time horizon, your overall net worth, the tax bracket that you're in, and other things are really important to consider to evaluate whether doing a Roth conversion might ultimately be beneficial for you and your family. So there's no one answer, but it's something worth considering, particularly given the environment that we're in right now, and that the decision needs to be made before the end of the year. Tim, another thing that's important for folks listening to realize when it comes to things that need to be decided or done or executed before the end of the year, and you mentioned this, if you are in the required minimum distribution stage of your life, if you're over 72 and you have to take your RMD, it's really important that you satisfy, first of all, that required minimum distribution, and that you have a strategy for what to do with it. And there are some unique planning things that you can do if they apply to you, if you have other intentions, or maybe if you don't need that money for income and you are thinking about gifting or other things. There's some gifting strategies that would satisfy your RMD that it's really important to remind people about.
There is. This is a really friendly tax law. There's not too many that are as friendly as this. It's a reminder. Every year we like to mention this. It's not the most common thing we've seen, but it's certainly an important friendly deduction. So some pre-tax bucket investors, okay, with IRAs, are required to make their distributions this year, but they may not need the money, right? They may have other sources of income, other types of accounts where they use their monies from, but they are required throughout the year to withdraw money anyways. Because it's taxable, that could be a headache. However, one way to reduce or even eliminate the taxability of that IRA withdrawal, okay, pre-tax bucket withdrawal, is you are allowed to donate your IRA withdrawal directly to a charity. And that would satisfy the required minimum distribution amount or apply it against it. However, it would not be considered a taxable withdrawal, even though it qualifies as part of your required minimum. So it is one heck of a great way to get a deduction and lower your taxable income on the front page of your return directly from the IRA. So it has to be cut right from the custodian that your IRA is parked at and sent to the qualified charity from them. Okay. It's not something you can pay out of your pocket, out of your IRA account. Okay. It's got to be directly through there.
Tim, one of the other things, speaking of charitably inclined, is that at the end of the year, if you are so inclined and you are thinking of ways that you can maximize your charitable donations, it can also have an impact on your overall tax picture, right? So certain things that I'd love you to share a little insight into, such as depending on your income for a specific year, right? You might have the inclination to do sort of a bunching strategy, or if you're in a lower income year, you might want to pare back or delay certain gifts. And if you are gifting, there's different ways you can do it, right, that have different tax benefits, right, where you could potentially gift actual appreciated investments versus cash, right? And there's different benefits to doing that, both to you and to the recipient of the fund. So can we get into a little bit of those, right? One of them would be in your higher income years, it may benefit you to give more than you maybe normally would, a greater amount, to charity, where you could potentially reduce your tax burden, right?
Right. So we just spent a minute talking about how to donate from your IRA, but that would only apply to those over the age of 70 and a half, right? And so that's certainly not all the taxpayers across the country. So as we all know, donating monies, or in your example there, value of investment holdings to a charity will also potentially be a tax deduction on your tax return in a different way than the required minimum distribution way to go. Now, I have to admit, since 2018, it has become much more difficult to deduct your charity and much less common to deduct charity on your tax return than prior to 2018 because of the way the tax laws have changed. They give a much larger standard deduction now on your return off of your income than if you compare it to your itemized deductions with your actual deductions, okay? So if your standard deduction is greater than your actual deductions, including charity as part of those actual deductions, you do end up not getting a benefit from donating to charity, okay? So you have to understand whether or not you itemize your deductions. Let me give you a little more detail on that. If you're single and you're a taxpayer, your standard deduction is $12,950 this year, okay? So compare that to all of your actual deductions, such as your mortgage interest, your charity, and maybe some state and local taxes. If you're married filing jointly, $25,900 is your standard deduction. A pretty high number, I have to admit. It's difficult to get over that amount with your actual deductions, especially given the fact that interest rates on your mortgages have been so low prior to 2022, right? If you have a loan that's been existing, you're likely not paying all that much interest from an interest rate standpoint. So it makes it difficult to get donations in for charitable purposes. Although for those who are very charitable, it can certainly kick in pretty quickly. And one way to do that is certainly by cash or check or traditional means. However, also donating your shares to the charity that may be highly inflated in value, you know, really good investment that's done well over the years, that instead of you paying taxes, if you sold it, you can donate it to them in kind and transfer those shares over to the charity, and you get a deduction for the amount of the value of that charity on the day.
Right. And the highlight there, right, Tim, is if you are considering it and you do have appreciated assets, like an appreciated stock that you'd be interested in donating, the recipient of those funds, right, gets them, if they're a qualified charitable organization, right, they actually can sell those appreciated assets without paying for that long-term capital gain that you may have. And you avoid, right, having to pay that long-term capital gain by donating those appreciated securities.
Exactly. Fortunately, the nonprofit is not a tax-paying entity, so they can do what they choose with the funds and sell them and not have a recognized gain applicable to their organization. It's a win-win, right?
One of those rare win-wins that we love to highlight and point out, particularly around this time of year. A couple other quick things just to touch on, Tim, that I think are really important. Another that's sort of a charitable inclination, but if you are an individual who has a gifting strategy or would like to start maybe getting things out of your future taxable estate or are just trying to help folks out that you want to support, whether it's children, nieces, nephews, other loved ones, people that are important to you, right? Just a reminder that you can take advantage each year of an annual gift tax exemption, right? I believe, Tim, you clarify me. It's $16,000 per donee, right?
For 2022, correct.
And so if you are considering doing that, you need to do that right before the end of the year to avoid having to account for it differently. And it's important, I think, to remind folks, within your lifetime, there is a limit to how much you can gift without any taxable implications. But this is what you can gift without even having to notify the IRS, right? This is per donee, per person. You don't even have to let Uncle Sam know that you did it. This is allowed within the tax code. And it's important that if you are going to do that, that you do it before the end of the year, right?
Correct, John. It's referred to as the annual gift tax exemption, meaning it's not subject to reporting mechanism, is not taxable neither to the donor or the donee for a gift that's within this tax exemption amount. And let me give you a quick example. It's $16,000 per person. So each spouse is considered a separate person. So if they have a child, for example, they'd like to give monies to, it's not just $16,000, it's $16,000 times two. Each spouse can donate the $16,000. And this number is going up next year by $1,000. Obviously, an example of inflation kicking in here, up to $17,000 for 2023. And so if you wanted to gift again quickly, you can, right? You can get a gift in by year end. And if you'd like to do it again quickly for one reason or another, January starts another calendar year. They use the calendar year as the time frame.
Absolutely. All right. One last thing that I think it's really important to highlight for folks, and it's something that's really critically important. It's something that we do a lot at Mercer Advisors as a part of our best practices, which is if you haven't done it recently, or if you haven't done it this year or in the last few years, it's a matter of best practice that you should periodically review your estate plans and your beneficiary designations to make sure that your plans and all the documentation that goes along with it, the titling and everything else, align with your desired intentions. And if there's been changes, maybe there's changes in the rules or limits since you did your documentation, or maybe you've had yourself a significant life event, a marriage, a divorce, a birth, an adoption, change in family situation, change in residency, things that materially may have changed the plan itself, it's critically important. It's a great time of the year to make any of those updates that need to be made, particularly as some things may have changed since the last time you reviewed them.
Correct, John. There was a change in particular that it was quite a change, honestly. It was quite different from the prior law, effective as of 2020. So it's still pretty new, from the SECURE Act. And it relates to who your beneficiaries are when it comes to an IRA. Beneficiaries used to be able to inherit those funds and now be subject to a withdrawal rate based on the beneficiary's lifespan instead of the prior generations who own the IRA. Well, now there's a 10-year time frame, right? So make sure that your beneficiary is up to date and whether the best strategy for the beneficiary that is stated is still what you'd like to do for your estate planning purposes.
Yeah, that's a really great update there, Tim, as well, right? The SECURE Act eliminated what was colloquially known as the stretch IRA, right? So the beneficiary could stretch it out for the rest of their lifetime. And now that it's a 10-year time horizon, it's important that you know that that changed. And if it does change your strategy around your estate or any of your other plans, no better time than now to update all of those plans and the documentation that goes along with them.
The rule I was referring to as the 10-year rule is not applicable to spouses, fortunately. It's for most non-spouse beneficiaries. Okay, there are other exceptions as well, but I want to make sure that the typical scenario where a spouse inherits the funds, that is still the same as the law has been.
Tim, we've shared what I think are some really important updates and reminders. But before I let you go, any other parting wisdom?
Sure, John. I think it's worth noting that, let's face it, 2022 has been a unique year for investors, taxpayers as well. And so none of what we've talked about today is necessarily new on the tax law books, but it is unique to 2022 in certain respects as to whether there be capital losses available for deductions like we mentioned, whether a Roth conversion, for example. 2022 states more of a case for options than recent history. So I think it's important to take a separate look this year, even though there's no real changes in the law, but whether your circumstances may warrant any beneficial tax planning for year end.
I think that's a really critical point, Tim. These are a lot of great reminders, things you've probably heard us talk about in the past, but this year uniquely may present some opportunities that you didn't have previously. So it's always good to revisit and see how they might help you and your family in this particular tax year. Tim Joseph, CPA and CFP from the Cordasco Financial Network, a part of Mercer Advisors. Tim, thank you so much for joining me for this conversation today.
You're welcome. Thank you, John.
So if what Tim and I talked about today has you wondering, how do these things affect me? Or if this is something that you can take advantage of, or if you just have questions, we're always here to help. Give us a call. You can reach us anytime at 855-558-3500. That's 855-558-3500. Or email us at asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfnplan.com. I'm John Walker from the Cordasco Financial Network, a part of Mercer Advisors. Thanks so much for listening to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. Have a great week.
If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com.